about a part of tefillah, davening, prayer, that bothers a lot of people. The concept of prayer, people understand. In almost every religion, there's a concept of prayer. And generally speaking, prayer is a way to connect to the God of that religion. And our religion is no exception. Our religion is probably the first to introduce prayer, since it's the only true religion, and it's a way to connecting with God. We recognize that our needs come from God. That's number one. Number two, He has the ability to provide us with those needs. Number three, He and only He has the ability to provide us with those needs. And number four, besides the fact that He and only He has the ability to provide us with those needs, number four focuses on us. And that is, we have to recognize and constantly work on recognizing that everything that we have and everything that we do comes from Him and only from Him. So besides the truth, we have to recognize it. So everyone understands the basic premise of tefillah, which is a way of connecting to God and recognizing that we're asking from Him what we need and that He provides for us. There are two parts of tefillah that are difficult to understand. The first is easier to understand, and the second is much more difficult. The first one I want to explain, and this is a concept in Judaism, and that is that God wants to give good to people, but He decreed a condition. And this is something that we believe and our sages of blessed memory explain to us throughout their writings. And that is that God decreed from the beginning of time that in order for Him to give us good, we have to ask for it. We have to ask for it. In other words, God brings the good down from the heavens, and it's like up here. If we don't ask for it, it stays there. In order for it to come down, and we should receive it, we have to ask for it. And asking for it is a part of prayer. There are other parts of prayer, praising God, and so on and so forth. But asking for something is part of prayer. It's almost like a light switch, if you will. The current of electricity is in the in the walls. But when you flick the light switch on, there's a connection between the current of electricity and the light. If you turn the switch off, you're breaking that connection. Prayer is sort of like a light switch, and it turns on the connection between God's desire to give us good and our ability to receive that good. And that is the way God decreed it from the beginning of time. And the truth of the matter is, there's a verse in the beginning of the Torah that says this, almost black on white. The Torah says, "V'chol siach hasada terem yihyeh ba'aretz." There was no vegetation sprouting forth on the land. That's v'chol siach hasada terem yihyeh ba'aretz. V'chol esav hasada terem yitzmach. And the trees did not yet sprout forth fruit. It says in the pasuk, Ki lo himtir Hashem Elokim al ha'aretz, because God had not yet brought rain. Why not? The Adam ayin la'avodes ha'adam, because man was not yet created to work the ground, to work the land. And our sages of blessed memory explain that rain, God did not bring rain onto the planet Earth because there was no one created yet to ask for it. If you don't ask for it, you don't receive it. At least that's the relationship between God and man, and particularly with God and the Jewish people. You have to ask for it. Now, how do we receive things if we don't ask for it? There are people walking around that never pray, and they receive things. They receive things all the time. They receive blessing, they receive wealth, they receive health, they have children, they have a marriage. So how do those people receive things if they never prayed? And the answer is, someone has to ask for it. It doesn't necessarily have to be the person who receives it, but someone has to ask for it. And I have to tell you, thank God, there are people in the Jewish nation who pray on behalf of all the Jewish people. And they ask God that He should give good to everyone, including to those individuals who don't ask for good for whatever reason. Maybe they don't believe that asking God will result in receiving good. Maybe they believe it, but they're frustrated or disappointed with the fact that they've asked in the past and it doesn't seem that God listens to them. Or maybe they're not frustrated and they don't have the time, or they don't have, you know, the wherewithal or the concentration. They just don't do it. There are people who ask. So the truth of the matter is, we have to understand then everyone in the Jewish people who receives something receives it because someone asked on their behalf. Whether it's them, it could be their children asked for them. Maybe someone has children and the children ask God, please give my parents health. So even if the parents don't ask for health, God gives it to them because the children asked. Sometimes the children ask, sometimes parents ask for their children. And their children don't ask, but the parents say, please give my children health. And then God gives the children health. And so on and so forth. But there is a concept throughout the writings of our sages that some you have to ask. That's one concept, and that's easier to understand than the second concept that I'm going to introduce now, and I'm going to spend the rest of the time we have together talking about. So the first concept, which is an important one, is that God decreed, we don't exactly know why, but we know we have an idea why. And the first simple reason is that this creates a connection between us and God, and the purpose for our being on earth, alive, is to connect to him and to recognize that he is a formidable force behind everything that happens to us in our lives. And the more we recognize it, the more we've done what we were put here to do. And that is to recognize it ourselves and to proclaim it to others. We have to recognize that. So praying focuses our attention on he who gives us what we need. So that's concept number one. It's an important concept. I want to take it a step further, and this is the question that I'm about to ask is a question that bothers so many people. And the truth of the matter is, I don't think there's a person in the Jewish nation who hasn't thought of this question at some point in time. We are taught, the question is asked different ways, we are taught, there's a Gemara in Maseches Brachos, in the Tractate Brachos, in the Babylonian Talmud, there's a Gemara that says, on Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis, that's 30, page 32, second side, Gemara says, "Kol ha'ma'arich b'tfiloso, anyone who prays sincerely, the genuine heart, really, really thinks about their request, ein tfiloso chozeres reka. That means that the prayer is not returned empty. In other words, it seems that what our sages are saying is that God responds to our prayer. And it would seem that what the Gemara means is, and God gives us what we ask for. That's what it would seem to me. Otherwise, what's the translation? It doesn't come, you don't come back empty. It means I asked for something. I stuck my hand out. I asked for something. And you put something in my hand. You gave it to me. The question that everyone asks is, we see time and again that people ask God for things, and it seems that their requests go unanswered. It seems that they ask for specific things, and they ask for it multiple times, sometimes over a period of years, and God doesn't seem to answer. So some people get answered, but it doesn't seem that everyone gets answered. And you can't tell me that those people are not asking sincerely. I don't believe it. I see people crying. I see people praying with intent. I see people praying for a long time. I see people praying and asking for things for years. Certainly days and weeks and months, but even years. Why are they not being answered? How sincere is a person supposed to be when they pray? More sincere than a person who, to me, appears to be genuine and caring and meticulous about what they're saying and what they're intending. So what do our sages of blessed memory mean when they say that every prayer is answered? Every single prayer. And that's what I want to focus my comments on tonight. This is a very important question. And this question has created a lot of confusion and in some cases doubt regarding the concept of prayer and even believing that God can answer our prayers and give us what we ask for. And there's no question that those are very fundamental principles in Judaism. The fact that God and only God gives us what we need, our belief in that, and our connecting to him by asking him for those things. So how do we reconcile what seems to contradict that? In other words, there seems to be times where God ignores the prayers and the pleas and the requests of his people. So how can that be? So in order to explain this, I have to first introduce a concept that's taught to us by many of our rabbis. And it's certainly in the Sifrei Kabbalah and the Baal Shem. Baal Shem Tov discusses this in great detail, but even in the Sfarim that we study in the Olam HaYeshivos, this concept is often taught. And the concept is like this. There are two types of ways, two basic types of ways that the tefillah, that prayer is answered. And they're not the same. In other words, before I go further, it's important to note that not all prayer is answered the same way. All prayer is all genuine, sincere prayer. I'm not talking about a person who prays so fast and they're not even thinking about what they're saying. So, you know, if you asked your friend for a favor and you said, he doesn't understand what you're saying, that's not exactly asking for a request. But a person who sincerely and genuinely asks for a request. So there are different ways that our tefillos are answered, and they're not necessarily the same. So for the first is what I would call an immediate response. There are times where God responds immediately, and he responds soon after the request, at least close enough to the time that the request was made, that to the naked eye, it seems obvious that one follows the other. In other words, on Monday morning, I asked for something, and on Tuesday afternoon, I got it. That's pretty close. I don't know if you expect that within 5 minutes, you're going to get your answer, but that's pretty close. You didn't have to wait that long. Maybe I didn't even ask a second time. Terrific. Wow. That's great. And that's called an immediate response. Ne'enah miyad. The person was responded immediately. Within a fair amount of time. And it's recognizable. And a person feels very good when that happens. Oh, yeah. That's terrific. Wow. You feel good. You feel uplifted. It even remains with you, that feeling, for a long time. You remember it. You tell your friends. You tell your family. You tell your neighbors. You're inspired by it. You inspire others. It's incredible. And then unfortunately, well, I say unfortunately. I shouldn't say unfortunately. There are times where God, for very good reasons, because he knows what he's doing and he's very good, he decides not to answer right away. Now, there are many mechanisms that are put in place for what happens when a tefillah is not answered right away. But the first thing I want to say before I discuss what those mechanisms are is the following. Everything I'm about to say is predicated on the fact that Chazal teach us, our sages teach us, what I quoted a few moments ago, and that is, there's no such thing as a sincere and genuine tefillah that goes unanswered. There's no such thing. So I have to teach you, we have to discuss, well, what happens to a tefillah that we don't see is answered immediately. So there are different mechanisms that are put in place. So there is something in the Sifrei HaKabbalah called the Otzer HaTfilos, which literally translated means a storage house of prayer. And what that means on a simplistic level is there are times where God deems it best that a tefillah not be answered right away. And before we get to what happens, it's stored. That's a metaphor for the fact that God does not forget your request, because God cannot forget. And the moment you articulate and verbalize a request, it's etched in the records, so to speak, in the heavens of God. And that request, because it was sincere, because it was genuine, and because it was heartfelt, God remembers it and never forgets it. So that's what we mean when we say it's put in the Otzer HaTfilos, it's put in the storage house of prayer. Now, sometimes God deems it best that the person who asked for it, it's not appropriate to receive his or her request now, immediately, but it's better for the person if they receive it in 10 years from now. And God therefore gives the person their request because of what they asked for 10 years ago now. That's one mechanism. Sometimes God feels, or God knows, that it's not good for this person during their entire lifetime to receive what it is they asked for, but it's good for their children. And therefore, although they did not make the request for their children, and they made the request for themselves, God saves the prayer. And when the relevant time for the optimal carrying out of the request arrives, God gives it to the person's children because the tefillah does not go unanswered. And God is good, and God decided for reasons unknown to us that it's not good for the person who asked. Sometimes God decides that it's not good for the person who asked, and it's not good for the person's children. But it's good for someone else in that person's life. Maybe the person is close to them, and that person needs this, and that person is not asking, or is not asking genuinely, or doesn't realize to ask. And because this person asked, their prayer helps for someone else. Later, I'm going to get back to this mechanism because it's a unique mechanism, and I want to briefly tell you why. If I pray and God decides that I'm not going to get what I asked for because it's not good for me, and my children are not going to get what I asked for because what I asked for is not good for them, but he decides that my neighbor who needs what I asked for, and it's good for my neighbor, and God decides to give it to my neighbor, guess what? I get rewarded for the fact that I was the cause of bringing that influence from the heavens down to my neighbor, because I started by saying that there's a rule, and that is that in order for someone to receive good, someone has to ask for it. Guess what? I'm the person who asked for the good that's waiting to come down on my neighbor, and it stops and doesn't come down because no one until I asked for it asked for it. And that's the way it works. And sometimes it works for the people of the generation and so on and so forth without getting into too much detail. But I want to elaborate on the mechanism generally speaking. I want to take this a step further, but please understand that a sincere tefillah does not go unanswered. I want to give a brief example before I go on to the mechanism. Imagine if a 15-year-old boy says to God, God, I want to win $50,000. I'm going to play the lottery and I want to win $50,000. But he sincerely prays. He's crying and he's looking at the heavens and he's raising his arms and he's shaking and, you know, and I don't know what he's doing. He's really sincere. But God knows that if this 15-year-old boy wins $50,000, he's not mature enough to use the money appropriately. And the challenge of having that amount of money with a boy that young may result in him doing things that are inappropriate, that will impede his spiritual growth, and maybe, God forbid, expose him to things that he should not be involved in. And therefore, God says, look, young man, I know you want the $50,000. And I know that you think you're going to do tremendous things with the $50,000. But I know better. And I know that right now this is a terrible thing for you. So God waits until the kid is 35, not 15. He's 20 years older. He's got a wife. He's got children. He has a job. He's mature. He has reasoning. He's intellectually, you know, matured. And then God says, ah, you asked 20 years ago. I haven't forgotten. That was a sincere prayer. Now's the right time. Now I'm going to give you, now you're going to use it to help your children grow. Maybe you'll give a little charity. Maybe you'll, but as a 15-year-old, what do you think a 15-year-old boy is going to do with $50,000? That's not a very smart thing to do. So sometimes, now I'm generalizing, sometimes people see themselves in a very limited view. And they don't always look at the bigger picture. Often we request and we ask for things, and sometimes only a year or two later we're happy that we didn't get what we asked for, and we realize that we were wrong. It's hard for us sometimes to see, to take a step back and look at our own selves from an objective standpoint and say, oh, maybe it's not good. That's why many times we go to our rabbis and we ask them, you know, what's good? Sometimes we can't see it, but God sees it. And that's why we have to be, you know, we have to be careful. We really have to ask God for, you know, if we think we want something, if it's best for us. But God knows what's best. And sometimes we don't understand it until the end of our lives, and sometimes not until afterwards when God reveals to our souls the reasons for everything that occurred during our lives. This is a very important concept. And I want to broaden it just a little bit. There's a Gemara in the Talmud. In Chulin, it's the tractate Chulin, on Pei Vav Amud Aleph, it's page 86, the first side of the page. Gemara says there was a holy Tana, someone in the Gemara who really lived in the time of the Mishnayos. That those are small texts that deal with Jewish law, and they were very holy men. And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was one of them. And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, the Gemara says about him that b'chol yom v'yom baskol yotzeis ve'omeres, every day during his lifetime there was a heavenly voice that came down from the heavens. I don't know if everybody heard it, but those that were righteous probably did. And it said the following. It said kol ha'olam kulo Nizor bishvil chanina b'ni. The entire world receives its sustenance because of Chanina, my son, this Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. V'chanina b'ni, dailo b'kav charuvin me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. And my son Chanina eats one small portion of, it's a certain type of a fruit, a carob tree. He eats one small portion of carob from Friday to Friday, the entire week, that's all he eats. Listen to what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that for some reason, the reason during this generation that God gave sustenance to the entire world, that means everyone who went to work, whatever they did, everyone who owned a business, everyone who plowed his field, everyone who sowed the ground, everyone who planted a tree in a vineyard, everyone who did anything for a living, he was blessed by God because in the merit of this Rabbi Chanina. But what did Rabbi Chanina have? You would think that if he was able to bring sustenance to the entire world, he must have lived in a palace and had a nine-course meal for breakfast, and for lunch, a 12-course meal, and for dinner, a 15-course meal. For the entire week, he had a small bowl of this certain type of fruit, carob type of a fruit. Not even, doesn't even, I don't particularly think it tastes good, and it's very hard. It's supposed to be healthy. But so the question that I always ask when I read that Gemara is, with all that merit that he had, couldn't he have brought some of it for himself? How about if I say that person over there gets a little less because he's wealthy, and I'm the one that's bringing him his blessing? But you know what the Gemara is saying, and the commentators explain. The Gemara is saying that Rabbi Chanina prayed for the world. And his prayer was so sincere that even those in the world who weren't praying sincerely received their sustenance because of the prayer of Rabbi Chanina. But God made Rabbi Chanina very poor. Rabbi Chanina wasn't necessarily praying for the world. He was praying for himself and his wife and his children. They lived in dire poverty. But God said to Rabbi Chanina, I mean, he didn't say to him, but he decreed, you're not destined to have a lot of money right now. I need your prayer for the rest of the world. And on a deeper level, if Rabbi Chanina would have had food for himself in a large quantity, his prayer may not have been as sincere for the rest of the world as it was coming from an individual who was somewhat hungry and didn't have enough and so on and so forth. I shouldn't say he didn't have enough. Maybe he had enough, but he didn't have spare. So for some reason, God wanted that there should be a righteous man in the world who was so righteous that his request would bring about blessing for the entire nation, however, the entire world, I should say. However, Rabbi Chanina himself, it wasn't optimal. It wasn't in the best interest of the world for Rabbi Chanina to have more than what he had. But don't think for a moment that Rabbi Chanina didn't pray that he should have more. If they came home, they hardly had what to eat. Rabbi Chanina said, God, please, give us a little more. And every time he asked, there was blessing for the entire world. God decided there was no one at the time who could have done as good of a job in prayer as him and bring the sustenance to the rest of the world. I want to tell you a fascinating thing. Someone once came to the Stipler, Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Kanievsky, who was a big rabbi in Israel when I was a boy. He was a very holy man. And someone asked him the following question. Someone said, sometimes there's a home of simple people, simple parents. They're nice people. They're good people. But they're not necessarily special. And they have a child, a boy or a girl, who grows up to be an incredible person, a great rabbi, a great rebbetzin, and someone who teaches Torah to lots of people. And he asked, how from a home, a simple home, do you find sometimes a very holy person grows up in that home and becomes exceptionally great? That's what they asked him. So he said, I'll tell you why. He said, sometimes the grandparent, the parent of these two parents who were simple people, prayed for their child, and they cried. And they cried for weeks, months, and maybe years. And they may have prayed, maybe they had a son. And they wanted the son to be a Torah scholar, a Talmud Chacham. And they cried every day, God, please make our son. And the son did not become a Torah scholar. Those tears are not lost. They're not lost. They're genuine tears. And God, for some reason, said the disciples, said Rabbi Yisrael, but Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky, for some reason, and God knows the answer to that, we don't. The prayer didn't go for the child, it went for the grandchild. And the grandchild became great because of all those tears. And I cannot tell you, tears don't go lost. And on the contrary, one should never stop praying. Because you know something? If you don't see, it's working. You just don't know. It's working for you, or for your children, or for the next door neighbor, or for it's working. You just don't see it necessarily, but it's working. Don't stop. Don't say, "Well, I've been praying for 10 years and I haven't gotten what I wanted." Yes, yes, you did. You just don't know it yet, or maybe you don't realize. A prayer works, and this is a very important point. There's a similar question that was asked to Rav Yaakov Galinsky Shlita. He's a great rabbi in Israel. He's older now. I went to school with his son in Kol Torah in Yerushalayim. And his story is going back many, many years. There's a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael called Ponovich. How many of you have heard of the yeshiva? Okay, some of you have heard. Yeah, how many of you have heard of Harvard University? All right, so this is the Harvard of yeshivas. Okay, is that, you understand? This is like, to get into Ponovich, you have to take a test. You have to be, I'm going to tell you something. When I was in Kol Torah, and Kol Torah is one of the best yeshivas in the world. When I was in Kol Torah, my roommate was taking a test to get into Ponovich. He was so nervous. He was a great guy. He knew a ton of Torah. He couldn't sleep. He couldn't eat. He was taking a test to get into the yeshiva in Ponovich. So Ponovich you got into Ponovich, that was pretty impressive. Okay, so having said that, the Chazon Ish asked Rav Yaakov Galinsky to keep a special eye on a boy that just got accepted to Ponovich. It was the first Baal Tshuva to get accepted from Ponovich. It was in the early stages of the yeshiva. Maybe the yeshiva was open a few years. You have to understand, it wasn't common for a Baal Tshuva to get accepted to the yeshiva in those days. Today it's very common because you had to be an exceptionally advanced learner. And it wasn't common in those days that a Baal Tshuva reached that level so quickly. Today it's much more common that the Baal Tshuva shoot ahead. But in those days it wasn't common. So Rav Yaakov Galinsky said, he took advantage of the fact that he was having a conversation with the Holy Chazon Ish. So he said, maybe the Rav can share why this boy, this young man, merited, he was Zoche, to come to Ponovich from a background where he kept nothing and he knew nothing. How did that happen? So the Chazon Ish says, I know how it happened. He says, this boy's grandparents were religious. This boy's father left the fold and stopped keeping Torah and mitzvos. He says, and I know for a fact that this boy's father, his parents, cried every day to God, please bring our son back. They cried tears every day. Those tears did not go lost. They didn't work for the father, but they worked for the son. And he's now entering Ponovich, one of the most prestigious yeshivas, if not in the world, from that kind of a background. Because the Bubby and the Zaidi, the grandparents, they cried. God heard those tears. He has those tears. They didn't go for naught. They weren't lost. Yeah, the parents might have thought all those years and the boy didn't return. The grandson returned. That's what happens. That's what happens. That answers a lot of questions. I want to take this a step further, if you will. You're all aware, I assume, of the patriarchs and the matriarchs, the Avos and the Imahos. We have three of our forefathers are Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the Imahos are Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. So I'm sure you're all familiar, I assume, you're all familiar with the Avos and the Imahos. Now, the third of the Avos was Yaakov. Yaakov married two sisters. Yaakov married Rachel and Leah. He actually married Leah first because he was tricked by his father-in-law. I don't know if you're familiar with the story. And then he married Rachel. Now, it's interesting. Rachel is told to us in the Bible as having given birth to her husband, six sons and one daughter. That's pretty impressive. Six sons and one daughter.
Like that.
What?
Leah.
Did I say Rachel? I apologize. Leah. Leah had six sons and one daughter. That's fine. Rachel is told to, we're told, went a while without children. The truth of the matter is, we have to appreciate the fact that the Torah tells us that Leah was just as barren as Rachel was. Neither of them could have children. The Torah says that they both prayed. Leah was answered. She was answered. And she had Reuben, and Shimon, and Levi, and Yehuda, and Yisachar, and Zvulun, and Dinah. Ah! She was barren. She went for an ultrasound. She went to the doctor. The doctor said, it ain't happening. You might as well adopt. It's not happening. And she cried and cried, and God answered her. Rachel cried and cried and cried. Finally, she gives her maidservant, she has a servant, to her husband, and her maidservant has children, and she treats them like her own. Well, that's like a half answer. They're not her children, but she kind of starts raising them like her own. Then finally, she has a child. After years of crying, Yosef. And she's not answered completely. Then she has Binyamin, but she dies in childbirth. Well, that's not exactly, I'm sure she didn't ask for that. And not only that, Rachel is still praying. Our sages teach us that when the Jews left towards their first exile, the Babylonian exile, by Nebuzaradan, who was one of the high-ranking officers of Nebuchadnezzar, they passed the grave site of Rachel, and the soul of Rachel came out, and she cried on behalf of her children, and she prayed on behalf of them. And our sages are clearly telling us that Rachel is still crying and still praying. How long? Eventually, we are promised that the redemption from the current exile will, at least in part, be a result of Rachel's prayer, constant prayer. But here you have Leah. She asks, she prays, boom! I don't know if it was so immediate, but let's say it was a few months later. I don't know. Okay, it's pretty quick. Rachel's praying and praying and praying and gets partially answered and is still praying that her children should come back. And more than that, I want to tell you another thing that Leah prayed for and was responded to. Leah was really supposed to marry Esav, who was Yaakov's brother, but he was wicked. You see, Lavan had twin daughters, two daughters, Rachel and Leah, and Yitzchak and Rivka had twin sons, Yaakov and Esav. So everyone assumed the older one would marry the older one and the younger one would marry the younger one. Leah was really supposed to marry Esav. She prayed and God answered her. That's exactly what happened. She prayed. She didn't want to marry Esav. She wanted to marry Yaakov. God answered her and changed the person that she was designated to marry because she asked for it. So here you have Leah who prays and she gets it. You have Rachel, who prays and prays and prays, and she's still waiting to be answered. So this is part of what we're talking about. Leah and Rachel had two different purposes. Everyone's created with a purpose. Leah's purpose was immediate and local. Again, immediate and local. Leah's purpose was to help Yaakov begin the Jewish nation, and her purpose was more local for that period of time, and therefore God answered her immediately. Her prayer was not needed for a long-term goal. It was needed for the short-term goal of starting the Jewish nation. Rachel's prayer was needed for the long-term goal of sustaining the Jewish nation throughout centuries of exile, suffering, in the hands of the nations of the world, and ultimately bringing them back to Jerusalem in Erev Yaminu Amen when we come back to Yerushalayim. So, God withheld children. And what does a woman do if she's childless? She continues to pray. And Rachel prayed and prayed and prayed, and every tear she shed and every prayer she uttered was put in the Otzer HaTfilos, and it was saved. And God needed a woman as righteous as Rachel. He had plans for Rachel. Rachel was the matriarch whose prayer would determine the long-term outcome of the Jewish nation. Wow, that's a different purpose. And therefore her prayer was not answered right away. Or it finally was answered partially. Because had she gotten it, she may have stopped praying for children. Her praying for children resulted in a special blessing for the children of Israel, and a blessing that was necessary for the kiyum, for the sustenance, for the sustaining of the people, in order for the people to remain. That's the difference between the two. And again, I'll repeat, we continue praying because it helps and it works, even if we don't necessarily see it. I want to go back to what we start with.
Go.
Okay, just a few more minutes. Okay, all right. I'm sorry if it's we said earlier, and I want to go back to this. Sometimes I'm not answered for myself, not now and not later, and nor are my children. Sometimes it goes to someone else. But we said that I get the merit from bringing that hashba'ah, that influence from the heavens to the person who received it. I want to tell you all a mashal to drive this home. A mashal is a parable, an example, so that you understand fully what I mean. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not magic. This is not something superstitious. This is real. The way I'm telling you is the way it happens. I want to give you a mashal. The mashal is not real. The mashal, I'm making something up now. But that's in order to drive home the idea that I get rewarded even if my prayer brought sustenance and influence to another person. And therefore, that prayer is no less important than if I were praying for something that I wanted to receive and ultimately I received it. Imagine there are two people. I'm going to call them Reuven and Shimon. And they lived a long life. Reuven was blessed. Reuven and his wife were blessed with 15 children. 15 children. I'm making this up so I can say anything I want. 15 children. And he had grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I'm going to say 300, not just grandchildren, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So do the math, it works. So he had 15 children and 300 children and grandchildren. Excuse me, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Shimon, unfortunately, did not have children. He and his wife lived a very lonely life. People in the community they interacted with, they were socially active. They were good people. They were pillars of the community. They were involved with chesed. But unfortunately, it wasn't in their cards. And they lived life in a home that was pretty quiet. There were no children. And it came time for Reuven and Shimon to leave this world. And they go to the heavens. And Reuven is very confident that he's going to the heavens with 15 children. They're still on earth. But with the merit of 15 children and 300 grandchildren, and listen to this, each one of his children and grandchildren are Torah observant Jews. What can be greater than that? How proud he is. And he's standing in heaven with his head, or at least the head of his soul, held high. He's so proud. Shimon is coming up to Shemayim, and he has his head down. What am I coming up with? I did some mitzvos, I did some Torah. I don't have any children on earth to continue my legacy and to continue my ways and to continue so that my merit continues. And he's very despondent. He's very sad. If a soul can be sad. And in Shemayim, suddenly, they judge Reuven first. And the angel who's in charge of recording Reuven's achievements says, you have 5 children and 30 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Reuven said, what? There's 5 children and 30 grandchildren. He says, Ivut Adin, injustice. How can this be? This is the heavens, for crying out loud. Everything is supposed to be true. How dare you say I have 50 children. I can name each and every one of them. And I have 300 grand. And I give them allowance every week. How can you say that? So the angel says, it's true that you and your wife gave birth to 15 children. And then your children gave birth to over 300 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. But how many of your children and great-grandchildren did you pray for? Suddenly the soul of Reuven is silent. He says, I'll tell you how many you prayed for. You prayed for 5 of your children. This one when he broke his leg. This one when he was hit by a car. This one when he did not get accepted to the university or the yeshiva that you wanted him to get. That's when you opened your mouth and asked God for something. only for five of them. You never once asked for anything for your other 10 children because everything went okay. And for your grandchildren, only 30 of them you asked. Otherwise, I never heard a word from you. You never prayed. So guess what? You will get rewarded for every time you woke up in the middle of the night and every time you drove a carpool and every time, of course, God rewards for everything. But are they really yours if you didn't ask for them? They're not 100%. They're yours, but they're here in heaven. Now, why did Reuven get them? I really only deserve 5, but I had 15. Now it's Shimon's turn. And Shimon is told that he has approximately 300 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And Shimon's going, what? I mean, thank you, but no, I don't. My house was almost a tomb at times. It was so quiet. We were crying every night. We cried ourselves to sleep. How can the heavens? He says, yeah. But guess where those tears went? You know why Reuven had 15 children and not 5? The extra 10 children? You and your wife's tears gave him another 10 children. You and your wife's tears gave him another 270 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Or maybe someone else. I don't know. I'm making the story up. The point is this. If a person prays, it's considered as if they received that merit. So in other words, Shimon goes up to Shemayim, and this is so important, and people have to realize this. Imagine a person's ready to leave the world, and they really failed, they prayed their whole life, and they never got what they asked for. It's not true. It's not true, because in the heavens, what counts is not necessarily what manifests itself physically in this world, but the effect of your efforts. And the effect of the person who prayed, the effect of his efforts were that 270 children were born. Those are your children. Whose children are they if not yours? They wouldn't have been born. It's because of you that they were born. Everything is on your bank account. Someone comes up. I'm not a builder. I don't know. I've never built a building. It could be that in Shemayim, someone's going to say, those 10 buildings you built. Why? Because maybe I learned Torah with someone and he felt better and as a result he built a building. I don't know. How do I know? I have no idea what's going to happen. But the point is this. The point is we are going to be shocked, hopefully for good only, when we go up into the heavens, and the heavens are going to attribute things that we really don't remember having done. Now, I don't mean things that we forget. I mean, obviously, if we do something good, God remembers. We don't remember. That's going to happen too, by the way. You said a good word to someone once, you know, and you forgot. And God's going to say, you get rewarded for that. I go, I don't even remember saying that. Yeah, it's right here on video, 27 years ago, on a Tuesday evening. It's right here. And you go, wow, boy, am I glad I said that. I almost didn't say that. It works both ways, but assuming we try our best and we do what's good. But here's the important thing. If we ask for something, and because we sincerely asked, God brought that level of influence to someone else, we brought that level of influence down, it's all on our credit. So it's possible for a person who leaves this world childless, to have hundreds of children. And it goes without saying that if a person affects other families to get closer to God and to pray and to do mitzvot, of course, it's as if they gave birth to those people too. That's a different, that's not directly related to what we're talking about. But my point is this. I want to go back to my original question. And that is, if our sages tell us that a sincere tefillah never goes unanswered, then why do we see that people pray and pray and pray and they seem to go unanswered? And the answer is, that's not true. It's not true. Chazal are right. Every tefillah is answered, and therefore don't ever become disillusioned and say, I give up, that's it. Because that may, first of all, that may be the one tefillah that's now yours to get what you want, or you may be helping your family, your close friends, your people. The world. You don't know. You just simply don't know. But what you do know is there's no such thing as a sincere prayer that goes unanswered. And I want to tell you, after I learned these things, I became much more at ease. First of all, my davening improved because, look, we're human. And it's hard for us sometimes to pray when we feel that we're not being heard. It's very hard. Do you like talking to someone if they're not listening to you? Imagine you're telling your child or your spouse, and he or she is not listening to you. That it's not comfortable to talk to someone not giving you their attention. Well, we're no different. We're praying to God, and if we feel he's not listening, it's hard for us to pray. But the truth is he is listening, and he does respond. And he responds differently, and he knows better than we. But we have to understand that it's coming to us or our children, and our children is like coming to us. Which one of us wouldn't give our children the shirt off their back? But even if it goes to someone else, it's still going to us. And ultimately, bearing this in mind, we no longer have questions in this regard. We have to come back and talk about other questions, but this question seems to be resolved, and that is that ultimately we should walk away from every time we genuinely daven with the idea and the mindset that we were answered. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know how. We were answered. And believe me, after prayer, walking away with that frame of mind, you're happy, you're content, you're satisfied, your connection to God is strengthened, you're inspired, and you inspire others. Have a good night, everyone. Be well. Any questions?
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Any questions? All right, you want to...
It was so clear.
Well, I hope I...